podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
We're on. It's the Anfield Wrap Live. It's Neil Atkinson with Damian Cavanagh, with John Gibbons and with Ian Ryan. We're going to have a bit of a brief chat about Norwich, but we are really looking forward to Brentford. If you're listening to this as a podcast, you will get dropped in there. Andy Thomas will be joining us. And also, we will have Katie Alex on a new single, which is called Loving You. Andy Thomas on his book. But all of that is to come. We're just very pleased to be in one another's company on this Friday evening before the mighty boys in red go to Brentford. And at the minute, Damien, it feels as though we just bounce from one wonderful game of football to another. It shouldn't be as straightforward as Liverpool are making it feel.
Yeah, we've done really well, haven't we? Steady as she goes. You know, almost a perfect record. Obviously, the Chelsea thing wasn't. But apart from that, Liverpool are just taking care of business. And I feel like they're getting into the stride a little bit. And it felt like we were a bit rusty at the start, like all teams would be, but we're picking the points up. The goals conceded are down there. We're looking threatening going forward. I think there's more to come. Very promising. I think we're a genuine, we all wanted to, you know, prove that we were going to be a genuine Premier League contender for that title after last season. And, you know, what a freak season it was in so many levels. But we've got our centre-back position sorted out. The foundation solid and the Reds are back in business. Yeah, it's very good. It's a very good start.
It's a very, very good start, Ian. The one of the players I didn't talk much about after either of his last two appearances is Ibrahima Konate. And I want to talk about him a little bit, and I want to talk about the two lads who scored the goals, in that we've got carried away and excited about all the other little bits and pieces that you might care to mention. But Konate, you know, I thought Gomez was different class, don't get me wrong, against Norwich. I thought he was everything you wanted a leader to be, everything you wanted a senior centre-back to be. Konate, though, it's two games, it's two clean sheets, it's two solid performances. There's been one or two wobbles in there, but he's looked impressive. Konate so far, it's as good a start as is reasonable to expect.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he wouldn't be human if there wasn't one or two wobbles. You know, I think he's 22 years of age, so coming into this finely tuned Liverpool team, and that's what it is. When it's at its best, it's absolutely finely tuned. And I thought he looked great, Neil, to be honest. I think he's had two really good performances there with two different centre backs as well, so I think that's important to mention, because that is a big thing if you're playing centre-half. You know, normally, you want to be playing next to the same fella week in, week out. He's done one with Gomez now and one with Big Virg. And I thought he looks great. I mean, in terms of attributes you want from a centre-half, he's got the lot, to be fair. He's got the height. And we talked a little bit about that on the review show after Palace, in terms of he's definitely a physical threat. You know, if you're going to go forward for a corner, and we know we've got it with the likes of Virgil as well, you are going to strike fear into your opponents, and I think you've seen a little bit of that in terms of the chaos and the kind of mayhem, and then one or two others are picking up the bits, because I think Liverpool have been told, you know, be alive to the second ball here. When you've got two centre-halves as big as kind of Virgil, Konate and Matip, to be fair, they're all of a similar size.
Like, Ian, it feels to me like there's five marking them every single time. Yeah. And so it's five on two, and what that's given is, I think it's Liverpool have worked this out brilliantly, and it's creating space for others.
Absolutely, 100%. And I think, you know, the message has been to the forward players and one or two others, be alive, because there's every chance one of these centre-halves is going to win it in the air. And if it does, you've got to be alive to the situation. And we've seen that the likes of Sadio Mane, the likes of Mohamed Salah, Fabinho at Leeds as well. But not only that, I just think, I mean, you can't fail to be impressed by the size of Konate. Just, he is just an absolute unit. And I remember, you know, there's one or two players in the 90s that used to speak about Wenger's team. Even when you saw them in the tunnel, how intimidated he felt just going up against the side that looked physically imposing. So when you've got the likes of Virgil, the likes of Konate, the likes of Fabinho, Henderson, Alisson, all in the tunnel before the game, you can imagine it's a pretty daunting prospect going out to face that Liverpool team. You know, try and play football against them, they'll have you off. Get in a physical fight with them, guess what? They'll probably have you off as well. So, yeah, but really impressive, Neil. And I think just a little word on Joe Gomez, who, you know, came back after a lengthy injury. I thought he did well in kind of both of his appearances so far. I know the Milan one wouldn't have been easy. Again, he's in with Matip that night. But I thought he was outstanding against Norwich tonight. Really, really good.
Chad Ford, full of shit there, John. Moving into the idea of, we'll come off the comments before the first break. Moving into the idea, John, of the lads who do find the space in the penalty area, stick the ball in the back of the net. Minamino's so alive to that early one. But what I love is it's such a no-nonsense finish. If that's a classic Ian Rush goal, you know, it's a classic Robbie Fowler goal. He knows exactly where the sticks are. He doesn't even need to look, and he's powering it into the back of the net. I mean, the keeper's made of smoke, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, he's, I was just laughing at Robbo there, getting Ian Ryan. Sorry about this.
What's that trick saying?
So what are the Whittle's top reds he described it as he did with Ian Ryan? What a mark that is. Minamino, he's great for the first goal. He peels away into that space as well. He anticipates where the header's going before any of the defenders do it, and that's quite rushy as well, isn't it? No way that's sort of going to drop it. Then it's a turn, it's a lovely swivel and hit all in one motion, and it's not an easy one to sort of strike that to go sort of low and hard. But as you say, Neil, he knows where the posts are, he knows the position he's gone into, and he just sort of hits it. But as I say, I like the anticipation, the fact that he's more alive than anyone on both teams, to be fair, to that. And then the second one's a really smart finish as well, because he waits and waits and waits. He doesn't snap at it. And maybe, you know, in another game, if he's come off the bench and he's feeling, you know, he needs to impress or whatever, or if he hadn't got that first goal, you know, and he would have snapped at it. But he's really patient, isn't he? And actually picks his moment beautifully in terms of when to shoot and catches the keeper out. So two really smart finishes from him. And as you say, Neil, two proper strikers finishes.
The really strange thing about him for me, Damian Minamino, is I think with the possible exception of salaries and maybe Jota, obviously, as well, but he's the Liverpool player I love to see 12 yards out or closer towards the goal. He looks like he's got that bit absolutely sewn up. Yeah. It's the other bits of him it's firstly how you get him there, but it's also the other bits of him getting involved, which are a little bit up in the air. But his work in front of goal has been phenomenal, I think. I think he just looks to me like an absolute poacher.
Yeah. Anyone who looks like they've got time in a crowded penalty area has got a gift.
Yeah.
Sure. Can't be coached. You know, you can make players, you know, work the line, go the channels on that, but you know, that's his second goal in particular against Norwich. I like the way you described the first goal, but the second goal there, he had every chance to miss it, every chance to get tackled, and he just very calmly, sort of like very awkwardly went through and just nicked it into the net. Yeah, he's great in front of goal. He's just dead unfortunate, isn't he? Because, you know, the way that we play, you think he fits in, but look at the players he's got in front of him.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then Liverpool can't afford to, you know, take any chances or blood any players or bring any people through. And it's just so difficult. And if you don't get a run of games, you lose your tricks. That was another good point. You know, if he's coming off the bench cold, is he going to get that second goal? But seeing as he's been on for the match, yeah. I'm hugely impressed with his attitude. And I think that goes back to Klopp. You've got to look at, you know, usually you say, well, a player goes on loan, which means he's near the exit door. And Klopp has got this thing where he's got with the players. He's sort of saying, well, you go on loan to get you near the first team possibly as well. And he has proved that with Origi, of course, who's had, you know, like almost a second career at Anfield after going on loan. And he's just got to take that chance. How we work him in, whether we've got to tweak the system, whether he needs a high-profile injury, which obviously we would never want. It's just an unfortunate one for him. And, you know, it's a question of just mixing it all together. But it's a hell of a long season. And if that lad's got that attitude and he's determined to make a career for himself here and he gets a bit of luck, we've got enough games for him to impress in. So good luck to him. I hope he keeps it going.
On John, on Origi mentioned there by Damien, it's a brilliant header. For me, I feel, if we're all honest, we know that the club wants them to move on in the summer. We can all be grown-ups about this, including the way in which the club have been. And I think there's also been, since the 5-2 against Everton, I think he's not performed anywhere near as well as he can. I wonder if he's had a bit of a come to Jesus moment with the manager, where they've had a conversation and the pact may well have been, just play me through the middle. I'll showcase myself if you play me through the middle. Play me through the middle. And Klopp's gone, all right, we wanted to move you on. It's not happened. We'll play you through. If you're going to come on the pitch, you're going to play for us. Your starting position will be through the middle predominantly. You'll move around, but you'll be played through the middle. That's what I wonder, because to me, in the little appearances that we've seen, including even when he comes off the bench, he's looked at it in a way that he hadn't done for a long time playing for Liverpool.
Well, there's a little bit of previous in that, Neil, with Henderson, wasn't there, when he was playing as a six and then he was sort of dropping out the team and he went to see Jürgen and said, I can play further on, you know, and then they had that chat and he said, well, okay, well, let's see how that goes. And so, you know, whether if it has happened, you know, you won't be surprised, because there's, you know, there's times where it's happened before where we know Jürgen's listened to footballers who've said, you know, look, I think I'm better off at the moment playing in a slightly different position for you. And he's a manager who very much listens as well. You know, any interview you hear with him, you know, he always says, I haven't got all the answers. You know, I'm someone who listens to my coaches, but also to these footballers who he trusts and who have got him, you know, a long, long way in terms of, you know, what we've all achieved together. So it is quite possible that, you know, they've had the conversation, or just the manager's gone, well, you know what, we've been trying this for a bit. We did it. It worked for a little bit, and then it very much didn't. And then they've just gone, well, let's just go back to basics, and maybe just ask Divock a bit to go back to basics. And that's what he's done. I think he's played very much as a number nine, not just with the goal, but also I really like this hold-up play. In the week, I thought it was excellent. He was winning fouls for his team, getting us up the pitch. He was also holding up well, bringing his teammates in. And that's what, you know, you want from a traditional number nine, don't you? And he is more of a traditional number nine at his best than, you know, Jota and Firmino, who sort of played there, really. But, you know, it is good to sort of have that option. And I'd say option, using that word, that's what the two of them, you know, shown that they are for us now, a little bit more than maybe what any of us would have said a week ago. You know, they've come in and said, look, I'm an option for this manager and I'm an option for this team. And that's a great thing.
Mickey Stevens mentions Elliot as another example of going out on loan in the comments here as we go all the way through. It's a good example as well in that. The one downer, I'd say, Ian, from the game, and it's been mentioned by Ryko in the comments there as well, is that Chamberlain doesn't grab the opportunity as you'd like. We'll get into the Kayser injury later on, but Chamberlain doesn't quite grab the opportunity as you like. I actually think he plays quite well in Patch's second half. I think he has a good 10 minutes first half. But it's down to what you want, and what I wanted to see from him was run the show for us here, mate. You know, you're in here as a very senior player, and I think he steps up when Morton comes onto the pitch. I think he does actually take more responsibility. That's one of the reasons I think he has a better second half. But I feel like Liverpool in general, and the manager in particular, are desperate to see Chamberlain sort of grasp something and absolutely hammer it home, and that's just not quite happened for him.
No, I thought he struggled, I have to say. I suppose you've got to appreciate that all footballers take different lengths of time to get back into some form of rhythm. And if you're Chamberlain, he might be saying, well, I need 5 or 6 games in the first team with all the good lads to get myself into some form of rhythm where I'm back to something that looks like my best. The problem with Liverpool have got is they can't give him 5 or 6 games because he's performing to a level that just isn't up to scratch. It's not at the level you need. It's not the level required for what we're trying to achieve. So there's a little bit of a catch-22 situation going on in here where he needs the games. We can't afford to give him the games in the series football matches because he just looks an absolute mile off it. Where, you know, that first half against Norwich, and I take your point around maybe there's 5 or 10 minutes where there's 1 or 2 green shoots, but it's bouncing off him and every pass seems like it's going astray. And it's a little bit sad to see, to be honest, because I think when you've got a fit and firing Chamberlain, he's a hell of an asset. You know, he is one of the players, probably there's not that many in the squad, you could take the ball maybe 20, 25 yards out and drill it bottom corner. He's got the ability to do that, where he can shift and get a shot off really, really quickly. I love his running from midfield when he's absolutely pairing. You know, I always think back to, you know, the Champions League game away at City at the Etihad, where Liverpool struggle for a lot of the game, but then all of a sudden Chamberlain starts to make runs from deep and he starts to cause problems, and City don't know what to do with him. And if you could get that version back, or some form of that version, you have got a decent football on your hands. But at the minute you look at him and he just looks like he looks like a stranger, to be honest, to the rest of the players. And as I say,
now's the moment.
He's got an opportunity here.
Yeah, you know, Thiago, Elliot.
He has, but I don't think the manager's looking at Chamberlain as someone who's starting. And I know we're going to come on to Brentford, and listen, I could be wrong. He might give him a start for the reasons I've mentioned to get some minutes into him. But I think there's other people knocking on the door ahead of him still, even with the injuries. And I think Curtis Jones, in the back of a really good Norwich performance, would be thinking to himself, I'm in with a good chance of starting this game. Mm. And by the way, I probably should be. So there's a meritocracy as well at play. I think the manager's got to take some of that into consideration when he's picking his team. You know, if lads are showing, then maybe he's got to give them the shirt against Brentford. So I think the difficult
turnaround, what I'd say is the fast turnaround, isn't it, between Brentford and Porto? And I think that there might be a couple of changes in there which might give him an opportunity to play a game for Liverpool again.
Absolutely. I think Porto's maybe one where they might look at it and think, you know, could we give him 60 in that? And it is a fast turnaround, but obviously one of those games that's on the horizon is City. And I mentioned his performance against City previously, and there's been a number of good performances against City, but at the minute, you know, you wouldn't say I'd fancy Chamberlain to be starting that game, for instance. And then obviously after the international break, you'd open one or two other lads are back and fit and firing again, Keita, Thiago, etc. So it is hard to see him getting that string of games. Yes, maybe the other pairings, but it's the run of games, Neil, I think he needs.
Yeah.
All right, then. We're going to, if you listen to this as a podcast, we're going to disappear it and come back in a few minutes. In between the gaps, there's Andy Thomas on his excellent, genuinely excellent new book, Underground, Overground, The Fault Lines of Football Clubs, which is terrific. And there's Katie Alex to talk about her new single, Loving You. That is on the Tour Live podcast. If you are with us through the video, the live show that we're doing as well, that is, we'll come straight back into Brentford. So we're just sort of going to count ourselves in. It's 3, 2, 1.
And it's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson. And we just want to highlight to you a couple of things that we've enjoyed this week on Tour Player. So Tour Player, for those who don't know, is our subscription service. It's audio and or video. It's £7 or £10 a month. And if you enjoy our free content, then I'm sure you'll enjoy all our match day stuff, all our previews, all our reviews and all the fantastic stuff we're doing every week here on Tour Player. So I just wanted to highlight a little bit. Obviously, for those of you who subscribe as well, there might be some things that you've missed. I know people sort of struggle to keep up to date sometimes with the masses of content we're producing each week, so we thought it might be nice, BBC style, to do a bit of a roundup of sort of what we're doing. So Neil, I'm interested in anything in particular you've enjoyed this week in terms of the subscriber stuff.
I thought Three Strikes was excellent with Gareth, Mo, Josh and Chloe. Obviously Mo, you know, the way in which he spoke around the race question, the kneeling question, I just think it was really good to be able to showcase that voice, showcase that view, but also, you know, the passion with which he held it, and understandably, you know what I mean. I think that you know, in many ways, it can be difficult. I don't like, we talk about this a lot, the idea that someone has to turn up and they have to be the person who talks about this, and I always feel sorry for them. That, you know, yeah, here we go, they're gonna have to talk about this again, and when people would much rather just be able to talk about football. But you know, Mo was absolutely brilliant on that, and the whole show was really good. You know, from start to finish, it was an excellent show with a lot that can get its teeth into. I like Three Strikes when it's flying, and you know, I'm enjoying listening to it at the moment, and no, I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, I think Three Strikes has sort of really, you know, found its stride this season, and I think, you know, we tried it out a bit last season, and Lizzie did a really good job, and it's not sort of a host thing necessarily, but I think this, we had a bit of a rethink on it in the summer, then we decided to make it a bit more regular,
Making it more regular helped.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, Gareth is enjoying himself on there as well, and there's loads and loads of good stuff, loads of good discussion points every single week, but it's good to be able to get into that sort of thing when it is topical, rather than either having to do a special where you put it to one side or having to wait 3 weeks until it loops back around again, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But as I agree with you, I thought Mo was great on it, and I think, you know, the idea of listening, you know, for footballers to be doing it, obviously this was sort of targeted at Alonso, but I think for all of us really is you know using our ears, especially those of us who are white, and listening to people in terms of their experiences and choosing when to lead and choosing when to listen, I think is very important, and that came across. So no, I agree with that.
What was your favourite thing from the week?
I really liked Ewan Rory. I'm enjoying Ewan Rory a lot this season. These midnight callers that you're doing, not necessarily at midnight. I like the two of you. I like your relationship. I like that he enjoys your company in a way that maybe even surprises himself. But I like the two of you. I always feel like the two of you are just having a chat and we're all listening in, and which I sort of know what a podcast is. But you know what I'm saying? It's more like a phone call that I've you know, like when your sister used to be on the phone downstairs and you pick up upstairs just in case her and her mates were talking about anything interesting.
I mean, this is quite the insight.
They never were.
Lucky Jess.
And also, you know, you never get away with it long enough to find out.
No.
Yeah, put the phone down, John. But this in a less creepy way.
I like to think less creepy way. I enjoy doing it. There are lots of fun bits to doing it. One is that I think we're both open to the idea that a little bit this could just go anywhere. So yeah, let's relax into that. Josh writes the blurbs at the minute, everyone, and he gets them SEO friendly and all this. And when he asks me for the agenda for this, I screenshot and WhatsApp messages, because that's sort of how we work it out. I'm like, fancy a chat Tuesday, and then there's a bit of a back and forth as to whether or not Rory can do, because he's a very busy man, and then from there it becomes, all right, so what are we going to talk about, and then we'll sort of like have not the discussion that we're going to have, but the sort of jumping off points that we're going to take, and then that's what Josh gets sent when he messages me, and that's sort of how we do it really. And this week with the I've found the Guardiola thing fascinating. What was really interesting, just a bit of an aside away from that, was Dave Mooney says that it's not the first time Guardiola's done this. He actually did it about 10 games games in when he first arrived, which I didn't know because it wasn't as big a deal then. But that was quite interesting to know that, you know, this is an ongoing thing. And that's another reason why the City supporters are maybe a bit prickly about it. But, you know, with Rory, he does, you know, he really wants to get into bigger issues. My favourite ones of them are ones where I suddenly work out halfway through we're actually working out Rory's next piece.
Oh, that's why he's agreeing to these.
Oh, yes.
He's just talking a column through.
Yeah, he's working a column through. He often does sometimes say that in advance, but sometimes halfway through I'll realise Rory's working a piece out here, and they're always the fun ones.
No, that's right. No, I'm really enjoying them. I know the subscribers are as well. I asked for a bit of feedback this week on the subscribers, but loads of people saying they enjoy Rory. I did like someone saying, can you get Rory on the paywall? I was like, well, we could put an offer into the New York Times.
Yeah, I think the New York Times pay well.
but we will take as much Rory as we can get. It's very glad of it.
Really good of him.
So hopefully, if you are a subscriber and you've not listened to one of those shows yet, it's giving you the appetite to do so. And if you're not a subscriber, hopefully it's encouraged you to come and join us. As I say, theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. If you do want to subscribe to our audio and video content, hope you've enjoyed that. Back to the show.
A chat in a pub with self-declared terrible Lowry hipster, Andy Thomas, to talk about his book, Underground, Overground. This is the little punchy one we'll do for you via the tour live show. There'll be a longer chat with Andy to come out in the next few days, but it's a pleasure to speak to him because, well, it's a pleasure to know Andy and to get to talk to Andy about random things, and that comes through in the book. This is a big 10 minutes for you, this, Andy, because I'm gonna set this task. I think that if you like Andy Thomas, you will love his book. That is what I will say. So if by this 10 minutes they don't like it enough, they won't buy the book. But if they do like it, then we'll be flying. How's that sound?
Right, no pressure then. Nope. Just have to sell myself.
Have to sell yourself in order to sell the book. The book is about... it's about lots of things, and that's why it is exceptionally good. It is very much about what happens with AFC Wimbledon and MK Dons, but it's also about the very nature of what it is to be a football supporter. It is anthropology in its finest, and at the same time, it is absolutely stacked full of emotion. It is fair to say, and it has a wonderful line and footnote. I'm doing all the selling here, Andy. At some point, step in.
I'm not going to interrupt you while you're doing so well.
I could ask why, but the why is sort of within the book to a massive degree. You were in Milton Keynes around the time of the move. It's obviously a story that stuck with football supporters. You've done an MA on the matter, and I think you've expanded it for this. But is there any more why that I've just missed?
So, I mean, I think like a lot of football supporters, the interesting thing about the Wimbledon when the move to Milton Keynes came around, it wasn't just that this is a weird and unusual thing. It was a weird and unusual thing that really kind of became an issue for everyone that wasn't a Wimbledon fan as well. And that's interesting because Wimbledon at the time, no one really liked them. Obviously, Liverpool fans had a particular reason not to like them, but generally speaking, they were viewed as this, they had been the crazy gang and they were on a kind of a downward slope. They were getting small crowds at Selhurst Park, they weren't good to watch. And all of a sudden, this move comes around and, you know, people beyond Wimbledon fans were like, well, this is obviously not correct. This is a thing that you can't do to a football club. And so I've been wondering about this question for a while, and then I sort of started digging into it when I was studying. I did a big survey. I spoke to more than 1,000 people by a survey. I did quite a lot of interviews, and I talked to them about the Wimbledon thing, but I also asked them kind of, what is a football club? It's kind of this kind of core question, because football clubs are weird things. Almost everyone has a favourite one, but as an organisation, they do very odd things in your life. A lot of the time you spend thinking about them, you don't like them. You don't like the owners, you don't like the performances, you're bored by the games. And so, you know, what is this thing? Why do people keep going back to it? And a lot of people gave me the answer to that question, which is what Bobby Robson said. The Bobby Robson quote about kind of going into Skaters Park as a kid, holding your dad's hand, seeing the pitch for the first time. That contrasts to kind of the director's boxes, the TV contracts. And I think that's the reason the Wimbledon thing became a universal thing, because everyone recognised the dynamic of the owners of the club doing something the fans didn't like. And this kind of...
So that goes way beyond even as you sort of framed in the book. It's not the same as changing the kit a la carte. It's not the same as changing the badge. A number of clubs, including Everton, get a mention in that one, Manchester United as well. Yeah. It's something that's so much deeper and so much more profound.
Exactly. Like kind of when kits get changed, when badges get changed, people respond to that appropriately. When you kind of talk about moving the actual club from one place to another, that seemed to kind of offend people on a, you know, kind of existential level. Like, this is not something you can do to a football club, regardless of whether you own it. So I started from digging into that question and then kind of moving out from there a lot. You mentioned I came from Milton Keynes. That's right. I lived there from when I was about 10 until I left home at 18, which is the year before the MK Dons moved. So I kind of came down to London in a swap deal. And Milton Keynes is this weird place that everyone views as a punchline, even if they've never been there. It's roundabouts, it's concrete cows, it's this kind of fake place, it's an American place, it's a shopping centre, and all of that's true. But also to live there, it's all these other things as well. It's little communities, just the same as anyone living anywhere else. And so it was interesting to kind of, there's a parallel between how people feel about the MK Dons within the structure of English football and how people feel about Milton Keynes and the kind of the geography of England, like this kind of interruption of doing things the wrong way.
So within that, your colours are nailed to the mast, you're not shy about it. The colours are where, as you say at the very start, everyone's colours effectively wear on the issue, and the only place that they can be. But within that, what I think is fascinating is that is your exploration around the way in which different people keep using different language around not just the wider soul question, but specifically around Milton Keynes and Wimbledon. You've got the pamphlet that they tried to use to describe. You've got the FA report, which just still remains to this day. You know, I read it years ago, and you sort of reminded me of it when you were quoting from it. Like, it's an absolutely scandalous document in the grand scheme of things, and it's full of, as you point out, unquestionables. When it was on a majority decision, it wasn't a, you know, all of this within it becomes this, for me, this really odd incident. It's uniqueness now, because it didn't feel like it was going to be unique then. I mean, that's a big thing.
Absolutely. That's part of the reason I think it spooked so many people all over the place. It was like, well, if this happens, then why shouldn't every club move to the place where it thinks it can get slightly more people through the door? And I mean, I think part of the reason that hasn't happened is because the response to it was so so overwhelming from the football community. And it kind of, and you know, Wimbledon and Milton Keynes found it pretty hard going as well. The idea that they would immediately start curving back up towards Premier League football hasn't materialised. They went bust very quickly. They changed their name, because the initial project was, we will still be Wimbledon. There's a pamphlet you mentioned. It specifically says what we're going to do is we're going to move the kit, we're going to move the badge, we're going to move the name, we're going to keep the Wimbledon attitude. Good thing or bad thing, you decide. And it will just be in Milton Keynes. They even talk about putting buses on for fans from South London to get to Milton Keynes quicker and so on. None of that happens. 2 years down the line, MK Dons have changed the name. They're a new company now because they've gone bust and come out again. They've changed the colours. The whole project has been abandoned. One of my favourite facts on Milton Keynes about the MK Dons is they have the year of foundation on the badge, but it's there in Roman numerals to make it look old. So it's MM. I think. So that's 2005, lads. You've got a Roman numeral. So you've got this kind of, and that's, you know, the reason it captured so many imaginations is it felt like the thin end of a wedge, and that hasn't happened. And the reason that hasn't happened is because the argument was lost in the immediate term by Wimbledon's fans, but it was absolutely won in the medium and the long term with the success of AFC Wimbledon, with the broader response to the idea of franchising clubs around. And so there's this kind of, the argument over what a football club was decided at the time by the FA, by the independent panel, that a football club is a thing you can move. And then years down the line, it's been decided completely the opposite direction by everyone else. So there's a really interesting dynamic
there. But the key thing that the book is about, ultimately, is your part three is about soul. And you ask this question that you sort of cite within the text in one of a number of excellent footnotes, saying that you've sort of asked it in a Terry Pratchett-y way, because you're almost trying to offset something. You're not even quite sure what you're trying to offset, I think it's fair to say. To sort of say, but really, come on now, really, when you get right down to it, what actually is a football club?
Yeah.
And you get these answers back, and it's out of these answers that I think it forms the core of the book. My favourite one was actually in a footnote. Heart goes out to whoever responded simply, a fucking nightmare. Good work from the Evertonian. There is though, that is what this book is actually about. You talk yourself about going to see Dulwich, you talk about other clubs that have done other things, other protest movements that have spiralled up, other moves, other breakaways. What we're talking about here, what this book is actually about, is what football clubs actually are.
Yeah. And my way into thinking, because a lot of people refer to football clubs having a soul, even more people refer to clubs being soulless, stadiums being soulless in particular. Obviously, Milton Keynes gets called soulless by a lot of people. And so the idea of, you know, what is the soul? The soul is obviously at least kind of the traditional Western conception, it's this immaterial thing that gives something a life and identity. And so, you know, so all right, so what does it mean for a football club to have one of those? What does it mean when a football club doesn't have one of those? And I think I end up kind of tentatively concluding that it's all about the feeling of the thing. So Bobby Robson's definition concludes with the child going up the stairs, seeing the pitch, falling in love. That's a feeling. That's an overwhelming sense of emotion, experiencing a place for the first time. And those feelings all extend on through watching football. So you go to a game, the game itself makes you feel a certain way, arc of the season makes you feel a certain way, you go and see your friends, spend time with them. It's all these kind of bundles of experience and feeling, and all these kind of a process as this all happens through time and through time and through time, and other people come to the club and more people come to the club, and it goes down through generations. And I end up sort of tentatively concluding, because this is all very vague and metaphysical, and, sort of tentatively concluding that the soul of a football club is when it feels right to you, when it feels like a good thing. Not necessarily that you're winning the games or your team is good, but you feel sort of like you're home. You feel kind of like you belong, like you can be a fan in whatever way seems best to you. That's what it means for a football club to have a soul. The more common thing for a football club to be soulless in one way or another is when it doesn't. So, you know, the stadium's horrible, it's out of town, the stewarding is incredibly oppressive, or your owners are one manner of dickhead or another. All those little things that serve to kind of isolate you from the football club. That's what soullessness is. That's the absence of the feeling.
There we go. I hope 10 minutes, 27 seconds. I hope it worked. I hope you do like Andy. You should, if you've got any sense about you whatsoever. The book is called Underground Overground. They are being very aggressive with that cutlery in this gap.
Really,
those forks are getting put away. It is out. Now, buy it from Halcyon Publishing if you can. Halcyon Publishing are lovely people. They are good people, the very best. So do buy it from them. Halcyonpublishing.co.uk. It's available for £10 from them. Alternatively, it is available as an ebook as well. It's only from Amazon for that. But do give Halcyon a shout. You will like it, I promise you. It is about what things feel like. And as somebody who indulges himself writing about football, about what things feel like twice a week, you can definitely indulge Andy as well.
It's John and Neil again. I'm just doing another little insert in terms of Anfield Rap stuff. And if you haven't heard by now, we've got a beer. Not only have we got a beer, Neil, it's exceptionally good.
It is. No, this the most pleasing thing about the beer, because we do not control any aspect of what the beer tastes like. And the day he brought the box of beer in that had our label on and you know, was our beer, it was a bit tense. And the relief when the first mouthful of beer, not in a normal way of the first time you have a pint on a Friday afternoon, in a completely different way, is that it is genuinely delicious. And we wouldn't say it was genuinely delicious if we didn't think it was, but I really like drinking our beer, which is hugely convenient, not least for things like this when we're trying to get people to buy it, but also in general being able to look people in the eye and say, you might want to get that down here, it's very nice indeed.
Yeah, I was confident it'd be good. We've done it with Glenafric, who's a brewery out in Birkenhead, whose beers I really liked. Award winning, recently won 16 medals, so they're doing a bit of a promotion around that, but I'll do that at the
16
end.
Medals?
Yeah.
More than Michael Phelps.
Good. But yeah, they have these beer things and stuff like that, beer awards events and stuff like that. There's awards in every industry, isn't there, Neil?
Yeah.
But yeah, they recently won sort of 16 medals at this one. So they're currently doing 16% off online if you go to their online store. But yeah, I knew they were good. I really like the guys. But as you say, before you do that first taste, you're not so sure. But it is fantastic, and it is available to buy online from their website, which is glenafricbrewery.com. That's glenafricbrewery.com, Afric spelled AFFRIC. So yeah, as I say, there's 60% off all the beers as well, not just ours at the moment, so get down there. If you are in Merseyside as well, it's dotted around, so I know Scouse and Londis on Scouse on Outland Road and Londis on Penny Lane have recently restocked. Quite a lot of the Bargain Booze has got it in as well across Merseyside, so it is available in stores, but wherever you are in the UK, the easiest space is probably glenafricbrewery.com. So get involved, not just ours but generally their beers.
Oh, so much of it's good. We went and did an AFQ there, didn't we? We had a lot of fun.
Rolled out.
And we did roll out, but we tried probably about 15 different beers. it was a difficult night to work out how much you drank, because we got like a third of loads of them and they were absolutely delicious.
Yeah, they were great. So get over there, buy our beer, buy a few others, and yeah, do let us know that you've enjoyed it on social as well. I always like to see them out in the wild. And it is John Gibbons for Tour Live. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Katie Alex. She's going to talk to us about music and about footy and about everything in between. So, Katie, thanks so much for coming in to see us.
Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, you know, I mentioned your music there. How's it been for you over the last 18 months? Because you know, I think, you know, a lot of industries have struggled, but for music and performers, and especially someone like yourself, who's a rising star, it must have felt like kind of, you know, all your momentum and all your fun was kind of like taken away, really.
Yeah, it was scary at first, to be fair. Like, I had sessions in London and label meetings and all sorts set up literally the month we all got locked down. So at first it was kind of like, oh God, why is this happening? Then you kind of realise, okay, what's happening to everyone, so just chill out.
Yeah.
Then it went on and it went on, the lockdowns, and I kind of, after panicking for about 2 months, decided, okay, what am I going to do with my time then? So I just started working out on production, which is something I've always wanted to try. I never really got into before, but I thought, well, I've got the time and I'm just sat at home doing nothing. So yeah, I got my head into production and I've really, really enjoyed it. I don't know why I've not been doing it sooner. And now I'm producing some of my own songs. So it actually worked out all right, having that time to just chill out and stay at home and get into something. And then...
So that was like your version of Duolingo, whatever everyone sort of got on the phone. So instead of learning Spanish, you learn some production stuff. But that's cool because that means, you know, it's an opportunity to work with other musicians in the future and stuff like that.
It's something I've always wanted to do because when I write songs, I can hear the whole song in my head, but I can't say it to producers. I'll go into a session and be like, can it sound more like this? And they just look at me like, what are you doing? Now I can kind of go, okay, actually, if I can make a demo that sounds almost what I want, take it to someone who can just polish it up and make it better, then it just works so much better. And I feel like I've had more of an influence on my own music and sound then. It's worked out all right. Obviously, there was times when I'd get back up and do gigs when the lockdown's lifted and then we got locked down again. It was like, oh God. But it's been all right. I think that having the time to just slow down a little bit and rethink things and replan has actually been quite helpful. So,
well, you've certainly come out of it sort of well. The new single's doing great. Radio 1 plays and stuff like that. You must be made up.
Yeah, that song actually came from lockdown because usually we do sessions in person, but we've had to do like writing camps over Zoom. So we're getting sent backing tracks by my publisher and they said, get some ideas ready. We jump on a Zoom call and we all listen to them together. And that song came from a writing camp on Zoom. And then, well, we're talking like last Christmas, and then it comes out last week. So it was, you know, a long time. It was just sat there waiting to come out. So it's just great to see it come out now.
Yeah. So how does that sort of collaboration work? Because people who are listening might not know, you know, about sort of the idea of working with different writers, and because you're a songwriter, but also you're sort of getting influences from other people. You know, how do you choose who those people are, I guess?
Well, for me, so I'm with a publishing company actually based in Liverpool, so BlackRock, and it's primarily like dance and electronic music. So I get sent backing tracks from DJs and producers looking for a vocalist to top line it, so make the lyrics and the melodies and stuff, basically the voice on top of the music you hear. So I'll get sent ideas, send my idea back, and if they like it, we just basically smush it together and try and release it. So yeah,
and this one's, you know, gone great, as I say, you know, on Radio 1 and sort of, you know, getting about. You must be really pleased with how it's gone down.
Yeah, I feel like everything we were hoping for to happen with this track happened, but then a couple of little extras that we weren't quite expecting. So we managed to land it on New Music Friday on Spotify, which is like, you know, it's the dream playlist when you're releasing a song. And that was a surprise. So that was pretty sick. The Radio 1 thing, that was something we hoped for. And when I got that message from Sam, my manager, saying it's going out on Radio 1, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, shout out for Sam.
He's a good guy. Said hi, by the way.
Well, hi to him back. And it's good to know he's doing his job well. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So gold star for Sam. So does the success of this sort of change your not your mindset, but your plans in terms of, you know, over the next sort of 2 or 3 months? Because I'm sure it was sort of something you think about, but when a song sort of explodes like that, does that hurry things on a little bit?
I think mindset, as in like my mindset, it just spurs you on, and it kind of, it's that reassurance of, okay, I'm doing the right thing, I should be doing music, and, you know, knowing that someone's connected with it and thinks it's good enough to put it on those playlists or on the radio, it kind of just spurs you on to go, okay, I can do this. And then the next song, you get even more excited for it. But in terms of planning, I don't think it's changed the plan that much. We're still going with the plan. It just maybe like 3 songs further, we might go, okay, maybe we'll actually, that third song, that was going to be a bit more chilled.
Yeah.
Let's make it a bit more like dancey and upbeat, like the one we just put out.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. So, yeah, I suppose sometimes it can change a little bit.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we're sticking to the plan.
Yeah. Well, so aside from Radio 1, where can people sort of hear the track and where can people check you out more?
It's everywhere at the moment, but if easiest thing is on my Instagram page there, so Katie Alex Music, there's a link in my bio and that takes you to, I'm pretty sure it's the label's kind of like fan link, so you can go to Spotify, Amazon, Apple, it's all of them. Yeah.
Whatever it is. I want to talk to you a little bit more about footy and about your family as well, because it's funny, because I always say to people from outside the city, you know, everyone in Liverpool either likes footy or music or both. and that's just sort of the obsessions. And your family is sort of a real example of that, because you've obviously, you know, got more sort of the music side. Mm-hmm. But your sister is a footy player, came through at Liverpool and is now at Reading.
Yeah, she is. Oh, I'm so proud of her. She's sick. And I'm not just saying that because she's my sister. She is sick. She started off at Liverpool and we're talking like she must have been about 7 or 8.
Mm.
We used to take her to the trials up in Kirby the academy, and she was there for a few years, and then she's moved about quite a bit, and now she's at Reading. She's amazing. I'm very proud.
But you know, she must have seen in her time sort of women's football, you know, growing and growing all the time, really, you know, and the professional league sort of coming out. So it feels like, you know, for her, it must be a really exciting time to sort of be involved, you know, bigger crowds coming down, you know, big audiences now, it's on the telly, and, you know, WSL1 games on BBC and things like that. It's a great time to be a women's footballer, I would guess.
It's definitely growing. I mean, she's been on the telly before, but we're talking like finals, cup finals and stuff. So, you know, even when that happened, that was kind of like, oh my God, my sister's playing footy on the telly. Everyone watch. But now she's on every weekend. I'm just super proud. Honestly, I don't know what else to say. Just love it a bit.
The pride's so beaming from you. So it's really sweet. Yeah. It's really sweet. And for you with Liverpool, you've done little bits with LFC Retail as well, which is cool.
Yeah, so we did a little shoot a few months ago. Which is something I've always wanted to do. So when I got that message that day asking if I wanted to be involved in the, I think it was one of the retro campaigns, which was even better, because if there was any campaign I wanted to be involved in, it was the retro gear. Yes, that was sick. We just kind of mooched about Baltic Triangle for a bit and took some shots and some other stuff. So that was good.
So seeing these out and about must be quite cool. We had Kieran a couple of weeks ago, and I saw he put a picture of himself in Central Station
and stuff.
He's
in the metro now as well.
he's a big deal model. You know what I mean? We might have to up his fees, but joking. Have you seen yourself out and about, and is it a surreal thing?
So do you know what? I actually, my sister was in the shop looking at some of the, I can't remember who she was looking for. She was looking for a present for someone, and I went and met her in the L1 shop. And I was like, oh, there's the stuff I was wearing on the shoot. And then in the corner of my eye, I saw a poster and I was like, hang on a sec. I looked again and there's me in the shop. And I was like, well, I'm in the shop. This is sick. That was fun.
But they seem to really nailed it in terms of, you know, how they've done this, really, you know, using sort of, you know, local people and people doing cool stuff in the city. And I've really enjoyed it. And it looks, well, sounds like you've enjoyed sort of getting stuck in as well.
Yeah, it is. I've always seen, because obviously, like, they use a lot of musicians and upcoming artists, and I see other people, you know, doing the shoots with them, and I think, oh, they're so lucky. Oh, God.
I don't get involved in that.
And then it just came to me one day, and I was like, hang on, is this happening?
So next time anyone's in the LFC store and you see someone repping some gear, it might be Katie. Thanks so much for coming in, Katie. It's been really nice sort of chat to you. Best of luck, if luck is needed, for you going on. I've just checked on the Instagram and it is all there. So the link, so you sort of click through there. But the new song, Loving You, but I'm sure it'll continue to sort of do well and continue to get out there, and I'm really excited to see what you do next.
Nice one, thank you.
But yeah, thanks a lot for coming in, thanks, appreciate Stephanie. It.
So for the first time, we're doing a live podcast. It's Neil and John having another one of these chats through the tour live podcast. We're doing a live podcast. We've not done that. We recorded one in New York once when we were really all rather drunk. and we sort of decided that that wasn't for us around that format. Since then, we've never recorded a podcast in front of an audience as live, and we're doing it for the first time in Liverpool, John, coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, I'm really pleased to be doing it. It's at Leaf on Bold Street, which is a venue I really like. We have done events there in the past there, so we know the people and we know the sort of the lie of the land, if you like. But normally, you know, our sort of our live events are just for the audience, and we like it like that. But we've decided to do it slightly different this time. So it will be sort of a podcast. It'll be done as a straight podcast, but people in the audience will be able to obviously enjoy it live. And you know, in the case of the AFQ football, contribute, get involved. Because if you come along to anything involving the Anfield Wrap, eventually you'll be given tasks.
Yeah, you'll be put to work, rightly so.
Yeah, so we're doing it at What Football Means to Me, because that's a show that's been really, really popular since Adam sort of started it, and he's been hosting it, and people love it. And we thought that'd be nice in an audience. So Adam's actually doing that with me. I haven't done one yet, so I'm going to do one live with him in front of an audience at Leaf. And then we're going to have a little bit of a break, and then we're going to do an AFQ Football, which is another one of our subscriber shows where the audience are asking the questions. So we're really looking forward to it. And if it works well, we'll do more. There's a couple of other formats that we've got our eye on. But obviously, this one has to sell well and it has to work and everything like that.
So how do people buy the tickets?
They can't. It's with Eventim. Event IM, who is selling them for. So if you just go to Eventim, then you can search for the Anfield Wrap, or you can go to theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live, which I know is quite confusing because that's the name of this show as well. Or maybe that's not confusing, maybe that helps, I don't know. But if you go to theanfieldwrap.com/TAW live, and that should click through to the link. It's £10 plus a pound booking fee, I think £11, but it should be a really good night. Our beer's going to be on sale as well. Yeah, they've done a deal with Leaf, so our beer's going to be on sale on the night as well, so you'll be able to sort of try that. But we're really looking forward to it.
Excellent stuff. Do come down if you can. It should be a really, really nice night. It'll be a bit more pedestrian than the normal live ones. But the point about it is that it is there to sit, to listen, to enjoy, to absorb, and also to have a laugh around that AFQ football as well. We'll have an absolutely brilliant Monday night. Come along.
And we are looking ahead to Brentford with Damian Cavanagh, with Ian Ryan, and with Neil Atkinson in order to be able to basically clatter through and look forward to what should be a fantastic football match against Brentford. And very, very quickly, there's a lot in the comments that I'm going to pull through for us as we're going, Damien, but I want to ask you the first question. Brentford, for me, the thing that we need to talk about, we talk about our atmosphere, we talk about what games mean to us. For this football team that we're facing on Saturday night at 5:30, this is the biggest game of these players' lives. This is the reward for what they've done across two or three seasons with this manager. This is a 5:30, it's on the telly. This is their cup final, and we need to be prepared that we are playing a team and we're having their cup final when we might have one eye on Porto, another eye on Manchester City. We need two eyes on this.
100%, yeah. It's the cup final for the fans for how many years? Never mind the players and the manager. Absolutely. Yeah. When you get a game like this, I remember Julier's saying was always, you know, they haven't put the cameras on here to watch yous win. You know, they're waiting. Yeah. This is on the TV live for an upset. That's it. Now, when we went to Elland Road the other week, it was a question of if we start as fast as them, if we're committed as them from the first whistle, if we're bang at it, if we're slamming into the tackles, if we're pressing the ball, our quality will out. That's how it worked out. And that's exactly what needs to apply here. If we underestimate Brentford and we let them get in the ascendancy and they get something to hang on to, look at the start they've had, right in the middle of the Premier League table. Fabulous. All credit to them. Good luck to them after tomorrow. That's it, isn't it? You know, it is absolutely that. It's cup-type football. And, you know, if we think, oh, we'll rotate this, or we'll save our energies and we need some... To be honest with you, we could afford a draw in the Champions League game. We can't afford a draw in the Premier League.
Which is mad.
It is mad, isn't it? But, you know, I personally think we're going to get through that group. I think we've shown, you know, enough class there. I think we've got enough to go through that group. If we were going to rotate anybody, talk about experimenting with Oxlade, it's a good point there. Maybe that's for Porto. But if Oxlade's playing on Saturday, it's not for an experiment. We've got to do the business. The 3 points are on offer there. They will go down on their highlights video as the longest part of the highlights video at the end of the season if they get a result against us. That's it, yeah. So we've got to go down there. And one of my old football managers who I enjoy quoting on a circumstance like this is we're going to respect them. That's what we're going to do, lads. We're going to show them due respect. And we're going to go out on that pitch and then we're going to walk all over them. And that's the way to have it. So you're absolutely in the mindset of this is the toughest game as you could ask for. This is the hardest game we could ask for this weekend. And it will be. But if we're at it, and we show the same commitments as them, our guile, then we'll be okay.
For me, John, this is one where the manager's made those noises in a really interesting way. You know, Brentford's a nice story. They work, all work as a unit. They've shown what you can do with a player. They've talked up Ivan Toney as to how special he is. He's mentioned Mainz. I always think it's interesting when he mentions Mainz. You know, they remind me of when I coached at Mainz. He's very much on, we will respect these. I respect these. We're serious about these. If that was me, I'd be mildly worried if I was Brentford. There's nothing scarier than getting Jurgen Klopp's respect.
Well, it means it's going to take it seriously, obviously, but I think he will do anyway. And look, Brentford have been good this season, and you know, Jurgen will have watched the videos, and even the game they lost against Brighton. You know, I do the Coach Home, which is a Tall Pay subscriber show, and we had a Brighton fan afterwards on Monday, and he was honest enough to say that they got away with one, really. So yeah. we took our chances, they never, and we got a win that, you know, we didn't particularly deserve, but, you know, we'll take it because it happened to them plenty of times the season before. And so that's a reminder just that the level they're at. And someone made a comment before, and it's dropped off, so apologies, but someone said that, you know, Brentford will take points off some of the top four this season, so let's make sure it's not us. And I completely agree with that. You know, they've obviously already beaten Arsenal. Look, Arsenal, there he is, Ryan McBurney. Brilliant, who did that? Wonderful. But the things that are going on this tour live this week, let me tell you, exceptional, exceptional stuff. And I agree with that. And so they've already beaten Arsenal. Look, we don't expect Arsenal to be sort of troubling the top four this season. But I think, you know, there'll be a few scalps that they get this season, you know, who are better teams than that. And let's make sure, you know, that's not us. I don't think it will be. I think we'll take it seriously. I take the point on, you know, mine could be sort of on Porto. But I just think they won this league title so badly and they won it back so badly and they're so determined. You know, I think we'll be 100% up for it. You know, Jurgen, you know, we'll know what he needs to do. And I think actually, you know, although I've been impressed by what they do, how they play sort of might help us a little bit as well. So I'm expecting Liverpool to win if we are on it, but we do need to be on it.
Robert Mason asks, Ian, three big games in the next week, how would you balance the centre-backs across the games? You know, start with Virgil there. What would you look to do? For me, I'd be picking Virgil and Matip for this one against Brentford, and then I'd be taking a view on the one against Porto, but I'd be going Virgil and Matip for the one against Brentford for certain.
Oh, 100%. I think that partnership is there to be broken up, isn't it, at the minute, in terms of league games. So I think, you know, Jurgen's kind of made his bet with that one. I think that is the partnership for the league games until, you know, maybe one has to come out because maybe they've taken a knock or something like that. But that's his first choice at the minute. And then, as you said, you know, the European game against Porto, it's hard to judge that one in terms
of... It's five
of, you know,
subs as well, Ian, I'd say.
Yeah, it's a good point. I'm not quite sure what kind of challenge Porto are. You know, people keep raising the point about them beating Juventus last season. Juventus weren't any great shakes last season. Let's have it right.
Even worse this year.
They haven't started this one in good state after, do you know what I mean? So I don't think that's the kind of the bar to maybe judge them against. But I think he will look, because of the quick turnaround, he's going to have to look to make changes. So, you know, maybe it is a Canati and Gomez for that one. And as I said on other shows, Neil, you've got to keep some of these footballers ticking over. So you have got to give them minutes. It can't always be Virgil and Matip. You know, every game does feel important. Every game does feel massive. Every game does feel like a bit of a cup final. But that said, at some point, you're going to need to use some of these other lads because of injuries or fatigue. So it's important you keep all of them ticking over. And let's be honest, you know, Canate and Gomez centre-back partnership. I mean, there's clubs who would give their, you know, fucking right arm for some of that. You know what I mean? That is a great centre-back partnership. Yeah. You know, Joe Gomez has been elite for a number of years. Apart from the injuries, which have killed him at times, he's been brilliant for us. And Canate already, even in the first couple of games, you know, there's lots and lots of potential there. So it's what he's got to manage. But at the minute, I'd say the manager's getting it right in terms of balance. And I think he will maybe look to maybe rotate a little bit more than he's done in previous years. I think there was always a thing where he'd try and go with his strongest team all the time, but I think there will be times where he'll recognise, you know, on the back of last season where we did have a lot of injuries, and that was a little bit of a freak, we know that, but I think he will look to rotate a little bit more. And I think in terms of the challenge on Saturday, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it, to be honest. As I've got closer to the game, I've maybe got a little bit more nervous about it. I think maybe a week or so ago, I was thinking it was one of those where we go in there and just roll them over. I think you've got to give Brentford credit. You know, they've lost one out of five. They're quite happy not to have the ball. You know, in four of those games, they've given the ball to the opposition. And I'd rather about 35-40% the final like that. They're absolutely fine. And even the other night, they play Oldham, don't they, in the League Cup. It's still five at the back or three at the back, however you want to frame it. And they go and smash them for seven. And putting seven past anyone's still impressive, you know what I mean? Whatever level you're doing it at. So yeah. I think it's a challenge on Saturday, but it's one that Liverpool will relish. And Liverpool at the minute just feel like they've got the bit between the teeth. They look like they know they're a 90-point team minimum. And that's important.
Just on the centre halves to jump in there. I think he must be tempted to ask Virgil to go three games. You know, in terms of he's left him out twice now, as in the League Cup game, and then there was the game. Was it the Champions League game?
Champions League game.
So he's left him out twice. There must be the temptation there to go and ask him to do three times. But what he'll be conscious of is this international break, and he's got no control over what the Dutch manager, Louis van Gaal, does. And you know, he'll be going along with that. And I'm not sure off the top of my head how many times Holland are playing, you know, in that break, but he's got sort of no...
Always three, John.
Yeah, it seems to be three now. Always three. Oh, honestly. So if there is sort of three games and if the big ones, then he'll have sort of his eye on that. Neil's just checked it's two. But still, you know, it's Friday, Monday, and it's sort of not ideal, and they're both qualifiers. So we'll play in both of those, whereas Joel Matip obviously doesn't play international football anymore. So it might be a case that it's actually Joel, the one who sort of plays the three games, because I think, you know, there are three big games here for Liverpool, and the three we really want to win, those league games, I think we need to win both of them. Well, not need to win both of them, but it'd be great to win both of them with Liverpool in a fantastic position.
To beat Brentford and then see what happens against
City. But to win it would be great, and then obviously the Champions League, if we win it, we're in a great position. So I think under normal circumstances, he'd go Virgil in all three, Joel in two, and then Joe Gomez in one. But I think because with half an eye on these internationals, as I say, not being in control of what Holland do, I think he might go Virgil two, Joel three, and Gomez in one.
There's loads of really good comments, and if you're watching the video, you can see them on the right-hand side. My favourite's from Darren Murray, who asks, is this on long, like he's me mum? And I've got something on BBC Two she doesn't like, circa 1996. But there are other good ones as well in there, going all the way through there. So they are worth keeping an eye on all the way through. For me, Damien, your question about this game, I feel as though he may consider doing something at left back, but I think Robertson hasn't played either of the last two, so I'd expect Robertson to feature. And it's who's going to be the third midfielder. I don't think he'll rush Firmino back. Even if he can use him, he might use him from the bench. So for this one against Brentford, who's going to be the third midfielder? Who do you want him to be speaking? Who do you want him to be picking for this one?
Well, I certainly want Robertson to play. And it's no bad thing that Tsimikas has done all right, is it?
Nope.
I don't think Robertson should be worried about his place, as long as he plays as well as he can. He's such a committed lad. And God, we all know. How many games does he play? He plays 39 league games a season, doesn't he, that lad? Not as many as Ian. And then, you know, then if you look at it, you know, we've needed that sort of luxury, haven't we? And going back on the centre-back thing, by the way, I think that was a good way of looking at it. You know, I think Gomez could actually get an extra game in this. But with regard to that, you need them fresh. You know, and they are going to get injured if you just play them into the floor. I think Robertson's, you know, had his nice little rest and he's back now, and I think that's what should happen. Midfield's interesting, isn't it? That third place, you know, Curtis. Has he showed up enough? I think he did the other night. Is this a sort of game where Liverpool would fancy him? I do think it's one of those ones where we can afford to look at it a little bit because of the riches that we do have in the squad and sort of say, well, yeah, there's these two games close together to negotiate. I know what my 11 is for the Man City game. I already know what it is. So how do I manage it through there? And so that's interesting, isn't it? So I don't mind. I would like to think that extra midfield place you could give to one player in the Brentford game, to another player in the Porto game, and without saying anything, the two lads in those positions can be saying, I want to make sure it's me for the Man City game.
Yeah.
So as much as I love Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think he's a smashing fella, and that injury to him was very cruel and robbed him of a lot, I think. And he hasn't come back to be the same player. I would love to see it happen for him. But I've got to say, Curtis, for me, for Saturday, he's in the zone, he's in the moment. And he's one of those players where he's just like, in the exalted company that he's in, he's just like, give me the ball. Give me the ball, fella, in a telephone box and I'll get round them. Don't worry about it, I'll hang on to it. I'll keep the game ticking over. And the lad just needs games. He's young enough and he's hungry. So that's where I'd go. But I think we do have the luxury of having a couple of little options there and a couple of little ways to look at it.
I think... It wouldn't surprise me, Ian, if he's got an eye on Milner for Porto.
in that Milner's done well in that ground before, in that he's got that experience. And it wouldn't surprise me if he's got one eye on Milner for Porto, which makes me think this one this week, it might be... And it also wouldn't surprise me if he felt he didn't have to pick both Fabinho and Henderson for Porto. I think he does have to pick both Fabinho and Henderson for this one coming up against Brentford. I think he'll want to do that. So it's interesting to me where he ends up. Would you go Curtis?
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I think, given the nature of the opponents as well, there will be a lot of times where Brentford will sit in, and it'll be that three I mentioned before will become a five. And I think if it's Henderson, Fabinho and Milner, I think there's certain games where you can say, yeah, I'm all right with that midfield, to be honest. I don't think it's one I want to see against Brentford. I think I'd like the third one to be someone who's doing something a little bit different. And I think Liverpool have used Curtis in slightly different ways this season as well. You've seen him do a little bit on the left. We know he can do a little bit of midfield in various positions, as you saw against Norwich. But I think he's a really good footballer. I don't quite get some of the downplaying of the ability of Jones at times. He's got 50 appearances for Liverpool now. He's 20 years of age. That's some fucking going. No, don't worry about that. That's a good effort from anyone's standards to hit that mark at 20. I think he's a really, really good footballer. I think he's got a really good career at Liverpool. There was talk of maybe moving him on by one or two in the summer. Not for me. No. I think Liverpool are really, really keen on him. I think he's a footballer you could still mould into a number of different things. I think you've already seen it. We know as a young player, and he still is a young player, of course, but we know he's got that flair and that little bit of off the cuff about him. We all remember the Everton goal, what a fucking night that was, by the way. But he has got the ability to be a bit more strict and a bit more...
I love that we've got to mention that one, too.
Yeah. Right, we have to.
You warned it.
Honestly, I wrote that down before it came on.
But also just what
it's been at least a week since we've talked about it.
What a fucking night that was. I really loved it as an addition. What a fucking night that was. It was excellent. Yeah, I was there.
I really hope they're not watching. I can't be arsed with it. But Curtis has got the ability to be a bit more strict as well in terms of what he does on the pitch, and he can sit a little bit deeper, and I think he can control the football really, really well at times. I think there's a number of games where he's done that, and I think Liverpool have almost been on that journey with him, where they've been looking to kind of do different things with him. There's no doubt him as a player, I'm sure he wants to go forward and score goals and beat a man and put one in the top corner or do what he did at Fulham that time where he runs 50 yards and almost puts it bottom corner. He's got that in his locker, but I think that just shows that there's a hell of a footballer in there. And Liverpool, I think, know that. And for me, I wouldn't be looking past Curtis Jones this weekend. I think it's Fabinho, Henderson, Jones for me.
I think one of the things for Jones is I can't think of that many games he's played with Fabinho and Henderson, if you know what I mean. Because if there was ever a midfield that if you wanted to go and play some football with, you wanted to go and join that front three, Fabinho and Henderson is the two you want behind you, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've just been completely distracted there by Robbo finding new ways to offer people out.
Yeah.
Twitch chat is his new way. And also to create work for Josh as well, because he's going to help at theanfieldmap.com as his way of arranging it. Unreal stuff, there he is. He's sticking up for you and your curtains there. Devo.
Glad to have them at my age. My own house and everything.
What was the question, Neil?
The question was: Curtis Jones gets to attack if he's got Henderson and Fabinho as the two.
Yeah, I think so, and I think he deserves a start. And I think he's been patient as well this season. I think that needs to be said. He obviously thinks he should be starting every week for Liverpool, and he obviously feels like that he's got the talent to be there, and why not? But you haven't heard any complaining from him whenever he's been on the pitch. His attitude's been great. I'm playing as a six. In the week, which is an unfamiliar
so impressive.
Position
he was
forward.
So impressive.
He was
and huge.
Yeah, he was great. So I full house from me. I completely agree with the boys that I think he should start. I think he deserves to start, and I think you're really impressed. And he'll have, as you say, Neil, the license to impose himself a little bit more on this. And then I liked the suggestion as well of Milner coming in for Porto, maybe alongside Naby Keita, who will have a little bit of time to rest where he kicked the grass or whatever it was, and then one of Henderson or Fabinho in there, and then you just see where you're at for City. You see who's firing, you see who's done well in these games, and go from there.
Go from there. Are we all just quickly? We're gonna have a little bit of a chat about the other teams because I think it's a big day tomorrow, so we'll do 2 minutes on that. But very quickly, are we all basically just saying Liverpool win? Damien,
yeah.
Ian,
2-0.
John,
yeah. I think it'll be fairly comfortable in the end.
I think it'll be a graft and then it'll be comfortable.
Yeah,
like Leeds, I think.
Yeah, similar to Leeds.
Yeah, graft and then comfortable. Cans of the Anfield Wraps, own beer that you can get from Glenefric Brewery. Sort that one out.
Nice one, Tim. Lovely knock up there, Tim.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Beautiful, beautiful work. I think that Firmino will come on from the bench and he'll feature against Porto, and I think that he'll give the manager a headache for what he's going to do against Manchester City. All of that will come. Manchester United manager's lost his bollocks, John.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that used to happen the other way around, and so it's really, really enjoyable that it's now happening. Balanced Opinions asking for the link for the beer, if someone could sort that. Yeah, it used to sort of happen the other way around, didn't it? It feels like a bit of a Ferguson that he used to sort of relish and enjoy it, and now we've got it. Yeah, apparently Jürgen Klopp stopping Man United getting penalties. Not that eventually they had to stop getting them, because they were getting them sort of all the time. And, you know,
they've also had loads of penalties since we stopped them getting penalties. They've had five since then. We've only had two, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, but he's riled, isn't he? And he's in a bit of bother. And he's, he's had a decent start to the league, it has to be said. But obviously a bit of a disappointing result to the Champions League. But it shows they're still worried about what's going on in L4. And as they should be, by the way, it's a rational thought process from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They should be very worried about Liverpool because we're much, much better than them.
We are indeed. If you wonder why the Manchester United game, as someone in the comments has said, is kicking off at 12:30, it's because the Cortinas are playing tomorrow night in Manchester, and all the Mancunian dads from Altrincham have got to be able to do both. So they've just sorted them out. The jeans and shoes crew can have a lovely time doing both of those. Pioneered by top Evertonian and Mancunian Andy Burnham. They're his favourite band, and that's not an accident. The big game of the weekend is Chelsea versus City, Damien. And listen, I still don't know what's what, and Phil Blundell rightly put me straight on Friday's show around the idea that we don't know what we want as the right result yet. But it's a very, very strange thing that it could be the first time in 4 or 5 years that from a purely sporting perspective, this could be the first game where it's in Liverpool's interest that Manchester City win it.
Yeah.
And I'm really surprised that that's come around this quickly.
Yeah, me too. It is interesting. We don't actually know what's in our interest at the moment, other than Liverpool win, and everything else is secondary because you know it looks after you. I happen to agree. I personally think that I know we can finish above Man City this season. I think we can finish above Chelsea this season, and therein for me lies the answer. I think a positive result will be Chelsea not winning, and not least because they're at home.
The ideal will be a draw, if we're all honest. I'm saying if we had to then pick the next one.
Or if you're not scared of Man City, that they win. And it depends. But that's careful what you wish for, because they're capable of going on a great run. And so, I wouldn't want to get complacent about that. But I think Chelsea not winning would be in our favour. And then next weekend, we play Man City. And then by that time, the top three, and they will finish the top three this season, in my opinion, have all played each other once. And I couldn't half do with Chelsea losing a couple of points this weekend and then us banging Man City next weekend. Now that is the circumstance, isn't it? So I think with that rationale, and I think then Liverpool could sit pretty at the top of the pile and say, well, okay, our two games against the other top three have been at home. We've taken advantage, but points clear of these teams. Let's crack on with flat-tracking everybody else between me, and Manchester United will, be a thorn in everyone's side in that instance, of course. And good luck to them, because they'll finish fourth.
I like the bingo bango there from Damien, Ian. It is a tricky one. I'm looking forward. Tomorrow's a great day of football from a Liverpool perspective. It really is. It's worth bearing in mind. I want to give a shout out as well. The women are playing on Sunday at Prenton Park. If you can get yourself along to that, do so. John will be there. I may be there, may not be there. But tomorrow's a big day of football from the men's perspective. Ian, what happens at 12:30 there is absolutely massive. I think Villa will give United a game. That's not to say they'll beat them or even take points off them, but I think they'll give them a game. Chelsea versus Manchester City is a serious game of football that I think we'll learn a lot from in terms of how both managers go for it. And it wouldn't surprise me if neither manager goes for it. We talk it up, everyone talks it up, and then it's an absolutely dreadful game by the hour mark, and maybe someone throws the dice.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think you've seen, over recent games, Tuchel's had Guardiola's number a little bit. I don't think it's a game that City are relishing by any stretch, to be honest. And I know both teams have maybe got one or two key players out. I think Mount's missing for Chelsea. I think he comes off in the last game, actually. And he's a player that Tuchel's kind of relied on a lot, to be fair, for all the kind of stars that are at Chelsea. Mason Mount has been one that is a bit of a... a mainstay, to be honest. Certainly last season, I think there's been a bit more of a cautionary approach with them this season. And then City are missing players, aren't they, as well? I think, you know, there's still one or two out at centre-half. And I think in midfield, Neil's an area where you can really, really get at Man City. You know, if I can't for one second think he's going to play Fernandinho, but if he does, they're in fucking trouble because he's now starting to look every kind of, you know, year of those 36 years, to be honest. And, you know, people talked a lot about them not getting Harry Kane in the summer. I understand why, but I always felt there was an issue in the centre of the park. And I know they've got Rodri.
Couldn't agree more. I like Rodri, but they could have done with another one.
Yeah, they could have done with another one.
You've got all the money in the world. Why you've got Fernandinho playing for you at the age of 30?
Yeah, I think everyone thought he was going, and all of a sudden he ends up staying. But I think, you know, that is a weakness, especially when you look at Chelsea's midfield, where it can control tempo, it can control a game. So I think sitting here right now, you'd have to make Chelsea favourites. I agree with Damien. Listen, if you can pick a scoreline, give me a draw all day long, because, you know, the Phil Blundell thing about you don't know what you know until maybe late in the season is absolutely right. You know, who knows where this season will go. You know, have Chelsea got the ability to string that many wins together that we've seen City do over a consistent basis? Not so sure. But I don't think they'll be far away, you know, given what we've seen over the last kind of 12 months. Tuchel's got them in really good shape, both defensively and then offensively with Lukaku. I mean, you know, he just looks like he's kicked on another gear or two. So, yeah, give me a draw all day long tomorrow.
Draw all day long is what we want. But what we are all in for is Liverpool winning another league title. That is very, very possible. And this weekend would go a long, long, long way towards it. Listen, next week we're doing this 5 o'clock on the Friday. Do tell your mates, do come and join us, because we can't wait. It'll be something special. This weekend will obviously be fantastic. There's all the Anfield Rap stuff that you need. Theanfieldrap.com/subscribe in both the run-up to the game and then the immediate aftermath of the game and then the reaction to the game against Brentford. It's a pretty special weekend, this one. It's one that can really blow the title race wide open. You shouldn't say that after 6 games, but it is true. Liverpool will get stuck right into Brentford. I cannot wait for it. It's a big, big Saturday. Whatever you're doing, Reds, enjoy yourselves. Thank you very much to Damien Cavanagh, to John Gibbons, and to Ian Ryan. We'll be back with more of this next week, 5 o'clock, the Anfield Wrap Live, through all the different platforms. See you then.
Sports Social Podcast Network.